Caribou Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Fritz Waugh Show on Tuesday, May 29th at 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Fritz Waugh will be headlining this show, playing songs off her latest release, the self-written and produced Avenue A. Also playing will be David Barber and Radio Phoenix, mixing hip-hop and jazz, and Trent Barspool, who mixes jazz and modern music. Again, that's The Fritz Waugh Show on Tuesday, May 29th at 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios, 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Caribou Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Nat Turner Project book release on Thursday, May 24th at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall in Portland. The Nat Turner Project allows artists of color to go beyond the usual initial expositions inherent in presenting art born of marginalized perspectives to a dominant culture and creates an environment of inclusivity, a communal harbor for artists previously silenced by institutional constraints, and actively provides priority spaces to artists of color. Their first catalog, titled Nat Turner Project Testimony, will be released and celebrated with food, drink, and music. Again, that's the Nat Turner Project book release on Thursday, May 24th at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to Talking Earth. This is Patrick Bocard, your host of tonight's Talking Earth show. You are listening to KBO Portland, 90.7 on the FM dial. And I have the good fortune to be in the studio tonight with local fiction writer Edward Morris, who is a 2011 nominee for a Pushcart Prize. He was also nominated for the 2009 Riesling Award and the 2005 British Science Fiction Association Award. Edward, please interrupt if I get anything wrong.
We got it so far.
Oh, wait.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, no, I'm glad I asked you that because you weren't even, you were a disembodied voice for a second.
How am I doing now?
You are very loud right now. You're
great.
Good.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And I'm not sure if the grammar is or was. Is that, I want to say was, but.
Was what?
Was a nominee of for the Pushcart
yeah,
Prize.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, I messed that up then.
Yeah, I was nominated for the Pushcart for a story called One Night in Manhattan that was an alternate history story about the poet Hart Crane being one of the world's first LSD test subjects. And I gave him Stephen King's Magic Typewriter of the Gods to boot. But yeah, that one got nominated for the Pushcart the same year it was up. I had a lot of fun with that one.
And you have published over 140 stories since 2002 in markets as diverse as Interzone, Ellen Datlow's Best Horror of the Year, and the Children of Galaki tribute stories to Ramsey Campbell. Perhaps we should mention who Galaki is and if I'm actually pronouncing it correctly, which I'm sure I'm not.
Well, the thing with Elder Gods, and Ramsey Campbell would agree, Lovecraft agreed, Dan O'Bannon agreed, was that there's no one right way to pronounce their names because their names are like those Gnostic words that you can't say with human gifts of tongue like the Gnostic talks yep. about, the Gnostics talk about. You know, everybody says them different. Dan O'Bannon swears up and down that Lovecraft couldn't even say Cthulhu right because he said it came to him in a dream and it was just this noise from the back of your throat that like...
Cthulhu! Alright. So it's what you're supposed to say after you sneeze.
But Galaki is an elder god who was the creation of someone who rose up in Lovecraft's shadow but rose into his own right pretty quick, the great English horror writer Ramsey Campbell. Good friend of mine online now. We've been talking a lot about stuff lately, and I can't tell you what a charge it is to be able to say, hey, Mr. Campbell, I have had this story that I've been kicking around for years. What's wrong with it? And he sends it back and goes, nothing. I really like this. I love stuff like that. He's a good one to have around.
I would love that. I don't think it's that's going to happen for me anytime soon. You also run... the 5-year-old spoken word event, The Hour That Stretches, which is now at Ford Food and Drink every last Sunday of the month.
That is correct.
Which is coming up, and that is at 12th and Southeast Division.
Yeah.
And it runs from 7 to 10.
7 to 10, last Sunday of the month. In this case, it will be May the 27th. And this time, further celebrating our triumphant return back to Ford's, we have a lit fic writer whose work kind of borders on bizarro, reminds me a little of Vonnegut, writer named Hobie Anthony. Amy Haven, who is a poet in her own right and also part of Wolfbird Dance Studios. She has been kind of a founding member of the hour, and she reads for us a lot. Another founding member, our webmaster, Nick Jim Petro, who writes horror and manga, and I think he's bringing a manga piece in this time to show us. Josh Napton, who is a bizarro writer, and his performance just kind of has to be seen to be believed. I'm not going to give anything away. I do not want to sell the man short, but when you see Josh Napton read, you are witnessing a miracle. Dan Raphael, the celebrated post-beat poet from around these parts, the great punk classicist who reads with no shoes on, one of my favorite poets ever. And Anna Suarez, who was an hour discovery. I'd been mentioning this just before we started. She was 19 when we found her. Somehow we snuck her in at the original venue just long enough to read. She didn't drink or nothing, but we snuck her in just long enough to read. And her work took off like wildfire. She's publishing all over the place now. She writes for the PSU Vanguard still, I think, and has just kind of bloomed in her own right into a great writer, and we are partially to blame, but it's a pleasure to welcome her back too. So those are the six we got up on May the 27th. It's donation based. We don't charge a cover, but we do encourage donations, mostly just so I can pay the performers. I was able to pay everybody last time. That was awesome. Yeah.
So I think I'm going to step out of the way and let you read. You have a couple stories you were kind of threatening that they're so horrifying that perhaps Portland Airwaves can't handle it. But we may have to judge ourselves. And if we don't stop talking, we may not get all of them. So I'm going to step out of the way right now and let Edward Morris read a fiction piece, correct?
Correct. Now, this first shameless plug that I want to get out of the way while my copy of Word boots up and it takes forever. I just had the great pleasure of selling a horror science fiction series this morning that I had been working on since I was 11, since 1987. The series is called There Was a Crooked Man. It's going to be out through Broken Eye Books. We're just kind of negotiating it one book at a time, but he loves the first one. The first one, it's, you know, being horror and science fiction, it's the kind of horror that spans multiple time tracks, like Thanos-type stuff. But it starts out in the 1920s, and I was able to write from a lot of ancestral stuff from my own hometown and that whole perspective, but with my own perspective layered onto it. This was one of the pieces that I was mentioned that might blister some ears. It originally started out as a poem that I read at a punk rock show. This is the very first page of the first book of There Was a Crooked Man. The book is called The Alphabet of Lightning, and the prologue is called Depression Flowers. May 15th, 1927. Combustion. The stone stretch of Route 30 is foregrounded by sooty coal smoke rising from the hills, crematoriums for the dinosaurs, gnome torches from burrows at the roots of the mountains. The bombed homely face of Powersburg, Pennsylvania drools glittering coal oil and old yellow light. It is the face of a hard past full of broken homes and toys and bones, an open sulfur-cured wound in the earth, the scab gone Halloween orange. Skeletal hands jitter at radio dials all over town, searching for a brighter frequency through scrambling layers of steel and rotting linoleum that choke out the signals from anywhere else. Psalms shush its nightly screams, narcotized by the likewise Halloween glow of streetlights, the same shade as the sulfurous creaks from the strip mines on Lock Mountain's west face. Funny hollow-eyed children stare at newcomers in the streets, their gaze parting cobwebs of memory, searching for some justification of their own existence. In every stranger's face they see a liberator, a young crew-cut Christ to dig up their battered hearts from the backyard. Orange tears burn in smoke on their faces as they turn and walk the other way at your puzzled look. What a strange creature has been allowed to evolve to such an age, decanted from the oldest of bottles to sear the tissues like Medoc and mustard gas, chlorine canisters exploding upwind, burning a vomitous hole in the throat. Wind whistles through the woods, singing songs of random deaths and accidents and pockets full of money, singing the land broken into bits and burned in the stove, generating fibrous tumors of human civilization against the skin of reality. The chemicals in the earth have mummified the past. The burning golden future seethes outside the horizon like a John Milton monster rally beyond the flat edge of the known world. Beneath the killing wilderness surrounding town on all four sides, mine tunnels wend their way in crumbling wasp nests hither and yon. Every now and then a street collapses, entire abandoned blocks immolated in random implosion. People rarely notice. Rivers of ooze flow on through all those years of empty promises. The hollow-eyed kids dig for miracles in the hills, finding nothing but bones and clinkers from the Civil War days, now and then a croaker marble or two or a musket ball. A million tons of slag torn from the tunnels and strip mines all around that clear-cut blasted heath on the west face of the known world. The miners called the stuff bony, and there are indeed plenty of bones buried there from days just dead, when Molly Maguire was queen of the tunnels and the White Lotus Union shut down the rail shops. Look well upon this land. Trace the trapped flow of the swamp where pre-human foundations sank beneath the bedrock long ago, hinting at a someday that never came, choked by careless chemicals. Behold the sunlight that cracks on the surface of streams in the woods and the towering slag heaps at the foot of the mountain, on the backside where most folks don't go. The land around the rock dumps is a prehistoric seabed. It makes the very flesh hiss with all those lies burned into one from birth around here in the water we drink, the air we breathe, and all that manages to survive in the waste dump that spawned us. The rock dumps glow crackling orange with the bones of scabs and miners and lynched John Henrys at night, burning from the compacted pressure of all that weight and coal on itself. When it rains, the steam is enough to knock the feathers off an eagle. The bones of striker and strike breaker alike still burn in the bony piles, compacted into diamonds long ago, dug up and carved away a piece at a time to be sold as relics to the church, as fuel or fill for that new state highway out of town they never finished. The gnomes are all gone from that groaning ground for the day. The machinery has fallen silent. All that remains are the cries of mutant birds and the endless lapping of the crick at your back. Islands within it still yield archaeological records of a mineral boom that is burning itself out even now, with only fallout to remain. And if you listen late at night, you can hear the land screaming in its sleep.
Wow. That's the begin. Just the beginning. Uh-huh.
That's just the first page of the prologue.
So I did kind of have something I was hoping to play, but it doesn't exist at the moment.
What happened to it?
It needed an internet connection, which is not happening apparently.
Well,
I hope that is not the issue with what you were hoping to read next.
Oh no, I've got everything just on offline on Word.
Well, that's a good plan.
Let's see, what should I need to read next? Should I go short or long?
Whichever you want with your breath.
Okay.
And if it's, you know.
Oh, I'm good. I got enough breath for five people.
You're like Arlo Guthrie. It's like, I'm not sort proud of. Or tired.
Yeah. Well, I'm waiting for this one to pull up. The other book that I'm all a flutter and a twitter about is a broken superhero piece that I began some years ago that I'm actually working on the sequel to. I started it in the hospital during my first MS flare, and it's called I Am Legion. It's about a frustrated writer and bouncer who gets injected with an experimental MS vaccine that makes his disease come alive. It's like a second skin. Looks sort of like a demon. He calls her Little Stranger. And along the way, as he's trying to get a cure from the guy who mutated him, he finds everybody else that this guy mutated. It's sort of the ultimate tale of Big Pharma run amok. And there's this whole alternate story with a lot of the kids that he mangled in his human testing going to live in one place and kind of centralizing to get back at him. But I had a lot of fun developing the primary characters, you know, developing this guy that gets injected with the vaccine and becomes, you know, like a mutant, essentially, having to go back to work and all these other things. And his love interest in the first novel ends up becoming a receptacle for the dead soul of the villain in the beginning of book two. One of those things that only happens at the end of a disaster movie when nobody's looking. And book two starts off a lot different. You know, there's a whole different set of parameters, but had a lot of people read the fight scene from book two and tell me that it looks shot for shot almost like the fight scene from They Live. That made me laugh. But I brought in the first page of that too. Again, this is from
to test out that theory.
Yeah, it's from the second I Am Legion book. The first one is sitting at the publisher right now, and I don't want to spill the beans before he says yes or no, but he's interested, and there are also a few others that were biting. But yeah, this is from the sequel. The sequel is called The Little Drop of Poison. Let it begin in due course at the place from which everything sprang. Gah! The night everything went sideways, I went to sleep while she was still up watching YouTube videos and doing homework and listening to the police scanner, giving her her bloody space, shutting the door and pretending I didn't need a hug or have a question about something or want to make a packet of expletive deleted chicken soup. When I woke, it was silent in my ears, but not in my body. My disease, my little stranger, woke me up as she always did, low and insistent and keening and scraping and pinching my urethra. I knew better than to gripe her out. Johnny was a light sleeper and... Johnny. The light in the room was wrong, too dark to be awake at that time. I was starting to keep regular hours again, and so was Johnny. She was in school, and the new job was starting to bear fruit. There was money. She wouldn't let me go on the same phone plan as her or start a joint bank account, but there was money again and more stories about the kids that she worked with. Stories, kids, kids, still makes my blood boil. We were starting to use words like hope again and marriage and England. She used that England word a lot. And when I used the dreaded girlfriend word, I was steered firmly but insistently toward the F word, fiancé, some things I didn't mind getting corrected about. But there was a different language now in the long darkness that made no sense and melted off to nothing in my blurry, bloodshot eyes that just wanted to close again and rest their lids. They'd seen too much by half. Now it was time for them to see more, apparently. We don't pick that, see? But we sure know when it's time, when there's nothing in the way of the revelation, when our towers of illusion fall. We remember those times as though it were all preordained. Maybe it is. Not my field, but none of that makes anything any less shocking. Johnny was wearing that long gray nightshirt that clung to her curvaceous waist and steel-strong thighs like it was painted on. She was looking toward the window. I couldn't see her face. She'd just gotten up very suddenly and had jarred me awake somehow. Down the street, someone had their car stereo up loud. I'll never forget. Brother Ray Charles. I can't stop loving you. We were always so sensitive to each other. The way she would seatbelt me with her arm when we were crossing the street, whether or not I needed it. The way I always knew when something was really wrong, when she stayed gone for a long time, or locked her door for days, or so much of it. I see it all now. How could I have been so stupid? I rubbed my eyes and reached for her sweet, half-bare, freckled porcelain shoulder where the stretched collar of the shirt hung low. I touched her skin and it was, to coin a phrase, icy cold. That was just a Johnny thing. One of the million Johnny things I merely accepted on face value. The way I accepted her on face value, miracle and all. She turned cold when she was lying about something, or having to tell someone what they needed or wanted to hear that wasn't true. Trouble with the thermostat was all I ever thought, and I let it go. I stood there and took it, and I let it go. All I ever thought about it, time after time, when it happened. I stood there and took it, and I let it go. And that night, when I touched her, it wasn't her anymore. It was something wearing her skin. Little stranger went bananas, but I had to figure this out for myself. I willed my disease to sleep and attempted to bridge the oceans of space that exist between any two human beings who ever thought that anyone could ever really know or love another. Johnny, honey, you're sleepwalking again. Come back to bed. Ow, 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 ow. Flip. Crack. I can't stop loving you. Those icy cold hands sinking not just into my flesh, but the dark matter behind my flesh, behind the nanites, behind me. All of a sudden, Johnny was behind me, having flipped me to the floor and broken my arm. My arm. I was sleeping. Aristotle talks about things that make cracks like that. That final. That prophetic. That kind of crack that nothing comes before and something comes after. That face staring into mine, the eyes silvering up, the mouth twitching and twitching, thin lines of drool reflecting silver from either corner, the left stretching angle looking like the aftermath of some kind of ischemic event. Are you in enough pain yet? She croaked in a voice 10 times scarier than Little Stranger's, mechanical and auto-tuned and mini-toned, whistling and ringing back English like her granny must have sounded, full of weird Cotswold hill folk starts and stops and ups and downs. But another voice, a voice I knew, a dead voice, and ten I didn't. Not good. Whatever this was, it was the worst thing that ever happened, and I already knew I hated it. I was looking up from the floor, barely aware I was kneeling and clutching the massive galaxy-sized source of the pain. We both looked at the bloody, weird-looking piece of bone sticking out of my forearm, and my disease began to howl. I hate it when little stranger howls. It rips the heart right out of me. Worse than your own dog might unearth a corpse in the dead of night beneath the once solid foundations of something perhaps more temporary than it wanted to be. Little stranger flowed out silver over the nasty fracture, ripping me apart with a million more effective visceral words than Johnny Static ever knew. The extrusion felt like bathing the fracture in acetone, but only for a second. I looked up into Johnny's eyes and no one was home. That hurt worst. What I sensed there hurt worst. Skull sockets where I'd only ever deluded myself that anything ever else had been in the first place. The mind always finds a way to fill in the gaps, but there's still gaps, and everyone else can still see them. My dear sweet girl's head was cocked, her skin dope-sick pale and sweating, but for spots of red, two whorls about the eyes that were, each iris had swallowed the whole eye, or what the... Rather than her sweet slate gray color, her eyes had gone as silver as the stuff coming out of my arm that stanched the blood and boiled the skin back together. But couldn't this... Ow.
You disgust me. What are we even doing? This is just gross. The whole thing is just gross and wrong, and human beings are just gross and wrong and...
Full silver now, networked with squirmy black cells, fibers that went back and back, swimming like spermatozoa, growing like fabulously complicated algae, structured structuring structures that looked like they were gentrifying the whole neighborhood. A million maddening things that made no sense, whirling through my head, shrieking in shock. Oh my God, love, what did you just do? What is happening? What in the...
Oh my God, I'm so sick of the self-pity!
The human grindhouse flick newcomer croaked with my Johnny's mouth in that voice that was many and yet none, the voice of our enemy, Dr. Jeep, and yet more, like a sparking radio aerial being snuffed out in a dirty ashtray.
There was never anything to you, not even before. You make me physically ill. When did you go, anyway? When did you stop being able to even be present, to be this capable, grown human being you pretend to be in front of everybody and not hiding behind the absolute wrong skirt you could possibly think of?
From there, it probably hit a nerve, but for me, it degenerated into glossolalia when I tuned it out, when I dropped my feverish, reeking, re-knitting arm and dropped my jaw, and I think I would have pissed myself if I hadn't been up to piss just a little bit ago, 1,000 years ago, when I was sleeping. I had to tune it out, because it made so little sense I couldn't look it in the face and stay sane. Those rolling silver eyes like strobe lights on the bubblegum of strobes on the bubblegum lights of disaster. I looked my love in her sweet face and heard the voice of Dr. Jeep whinging and crackling from her throat while I licked the dust of the floor like a serpent. And then just then something tried to speak up for me. I loved that thing when it spoke. It did me a favor every time. It was a thing that had been working a door since it was 19. It clapped down over my face now like a steel visor holding back a sob. Okay, I'm gonna have you stand real still. Whoom! Crunch. Holy, what? Floor again. After a brief flight and an irresistible force meeting an immovable bedroom wall, right around that point, my disease finally decided to wake all the way up. If that's really how you want to play it, I let my disease do the talking sometimes, when all I would be able to do was sob. But this had been coming for a while. She was trying to tell me that I was going to be sorry, but not as sorry as Johnny Static was about to be.
Wow. Is there a scene after that that is a fight scene?
That was coming up.
Okay, so we didn't hear the actual, like, yeah, they live fight scene.
Yeah, no, that was setting the stage.
But to be honest, that was gorier than the they live fight scene, actually, because there's just, there's no bone showing when they fight each other.
That's all in how you define gore. I'll never forget the first Jack the Ripper story I sold, which was to Ross Lockhart's Tales of Jack the Ripper, Word Horde Books. there was not a drop of blood in it. And yet it was one of the hardest stories I've ever had to write.
Is that the one where he goes back in time?
No, that was everybody compares it to The Prowler in the City on the Edge of the World. I have no idea why.
No, that's...
This guy, Jack the Ripper, gets clubbed over the head in Shanghai and he loses the memory of who he is. He wakes up in Portland.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. It is the one I was thinking of, yeah. But it's not time travel.
Not time travel. He's just Shanghai, that's all.
Yeah.
The hooker that he's with brings up Phineas Gage, the famous example of the guy that got a tamping rod fired through his head. And, you know, he lost like one part of his whole brain, like his whole experience, but he still lived. I think it was his conscience he lost, old Phineas.
What story? Well, no, that was from real life, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, no, I remember that story.
Conscience or something along those lines.
Yeah, I don't think Jack the Ripper had the conscience to start off with.
He started out okay until he started remembering who he was, and then he's like, oh, yeah, this is he's like, this is what I do for a living.
So I think we might take a short break if you want. You feel up for that?
I could keep going if you feel like it.
Yeah, you had three pieces, so are we going on the third now, or is that...
Well, those were... I brought some of varying lengths. Let's see what I can do for the third one. There's one that I really want to plug because it's local, so we'll do that for the third one. This one is slightly longer, but it's the newest acceptance that I've had. I've worked a lot with Dark Regions Press in this town for a lot of years. Chris Morey and his father, Joe Morey, really salt of the earth. They publish a lot of wonderful people. They publish Joe Lansdale and Clive Barker, and occasionally in collections they publish me.
Oh.
They just had one. Brian Sammons is the editor that they recruit. He's a real powerhouse of a guy. A lot of fun to work with. Real East Coast, real civil, just great level head on his shoulders. I love working with the guy. But Brian Sammons is an editor for hire for a lot of different people, and he works for Dark Regions quite a bit. He always taps me for a certain kind of anthology, like if it's a shared world from some pulp fantasist back in the day, be it H.P. Lovecraft or Clark Ashton Smith or whoever. You know, if it's got a certain kind of theme in that kind of cosmic horror, he's always tapping me. I've done a lot of different work for him, but this one... They started an anthology called Tales from the Arkham Asylum, like stories that would have been inspired or set in the Arkham Asylum that H.P. Lovecraft mentioned in all of his stories that, of course, inspired Arkham Asylum in Batman. I'm not sure if it was timed with a movie or anything, but this was my contribution to the Arkham Asylum. It really could have happened anywhere. I just decided to put it in Western Massachusetts. This is from a recurring nightmare that I had when I was a kid. And after I wrote it down like this, it went away. And that's power. This is called And My Shoes Keep Walking Back to You. I found the graveyard from some things Uncle Dave let slip back at the house when he wasn't too drunk and or spun to make any sense, which was about half the time. Uncle Dave meant every word he said, but he still didn't say all he knew, like I wouldn't go find out. I remember Uncle Dave, like he might still be back there at what was our house, in his green John Deere cap, still parked in that farty lazy boy he was forever welded to, still preaching the gospel of Uncle Dave through his droopy beer foam-colored mustache. All the pint glasses out on the porch, front porch had rings in them that looked just like that mustache of his. Come sunup, after a night of having his expletive-deleted terrible friends over and me almost always having to fire off the shotgun a few times to break a fight or stop them from nutting up in a large group. But even a broken clock tells the right time twice a day. When the old gink let stuff slip, he really let it slip, and some of that stuff kept me up at night. See, when he got out on the meth and or real drunk on whiskey, Uncle Dave would rant and rant about our blood. We got home ground, Hank. We got a birthright. Your great-great-uncle was in service to a greater man, his brother, and they owned half a town. And on. I tuned Uncle Dave out a lot when he got to talking that way in one long sentence that kind of lost the thread of where it was going and came back half an hour later to certain points or sometimes never did at all.